morning and welcome to Good to Grow. I'm Norma Martinez.
I'm Denise Rodriguez.
And I'm Bill Hooten.
Well, today we're going to be talking about February gardening tips. We're already sort of into the middle of February already. But before we get into those tips, Bill and Denise, next weekend, it's that rose pruning demonstration we'll be talking about. And it's the rose pruning that's happening at the El Paso Municipal Rose Garden at Memorial Park. And that's going to be taking place next weekend.
It's a wonderful event. We've done this 4 or 5 years in a row. We usually get a very good turnout. Hopefully the weather will cooperate, and it's a great opportunity for the public to come see just a wonderful rose garden. There won't be too much growth by then, but they'll also have the opportunity to learn how to prune their roses at home.
And, you know, in the past few weeks, we've had interviews with master gardeners who've been here to talk to us about rose pruning, about different types of roses. And, of course, we invite you, if you've missed those shows, if you want to learn a little bit more before you head out to that rose pruning next weekend, just go to the Good to Grow page at ktep.org and listen to those past shows and get yourself ready for that rose pruning demonstration happening next weekend, 10 to 3 next Saturday, the 23rd, and noon to 3 on the 24th, which is Sunday. Well, let's talk a little bit about February gardening tips. There's a lot of actually rose information this month in February, but right now we're going to sort of veer away from roses for a little while, and we want to talk about some of the other things that we should be thinking about in February. And as we've already seen, temperatures are already creeping up into the 70s. So the weather's getting warmer.
Exactly. And with the weather getting warmer, people are more excited about gardening and they want to go out there and start working on their beds. And we're really not out of the woods yet for another deep killing freeze. So we want to make sure that whatever efforts we put out in the garden, we want to make sure that we don't expose any tender plants or seeds directly into the ground that are not meant to withstand these cold temperatures.
Because it was just 2 years ago this month that we had that really nasty freeze that killed so many trees and shrubs and caused a lot of misery in El Paso.
And plants were very slow to recover on that, even though we've seen a lot of damage in 2012 on the twig. Very tender growth was damaged in that deep freeze. So we want to make sure that, especially with the warm season, is really getting out there and preparing your raised beds by adding any types of amendments to that, whether that's organic matter or looking in where you're going to purchase your mulch or obtain your mulch for your beds. So that nice prep work is really good, and it's really helpful to take advantage of these nice, warm, sunny days.
Well, and I see more and more people doing raised beds, and I encourage them to do it. A lot of the real basic raised beds are only 8 inches deep, so I recommend people do at least 12. But there's a lot to learn about them, and they're so easy. We've talked a little bit about square foot gardening, and you know that's a form of raised beds because the beds are usually maybe 4 by 8 or so, a relatively small area.
Right, and we can certainly see a lot of kits that are available at garden centers that are almost complete. All you just need is just add soil type things, or you can certainly make your own raised beds. One thing that master gardeners are involved in is developing the Escada, the community garden, mm-hmm. out there. And there's different types of raised beds in that garden as well, whether it's center block or wood, or even repurposed materials that are for our cylinder garden out there. So I encourage you all to visit master gardeners. Their garden work days are Thursday mornings from 7 to 11. That'd be a nice opportunity for you all to visit and talk to gardeners to see what's going on out there.
And to see examples of some of that raised bed gardening. That's pretty interesting.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's one thing that we really want to look at is we want to be able to provide people with the tools, which is knowledge in this case. Like, I can certainly do that in my backyard.
Right. I think the main question that we get a lot is, where do I get my soil for the raised bed? Since you can do it from scratch, what is the best recommendation for that?
Well, the best recommendation for that are actually equal parts of topsoil, sand, and compost. Compost can be a composted manure that you can buy in garden centers. Of course, the bigger area that you have, it may be more economical to get a truckload of that. But it's important to look at the size of your yard and how much you really to invest, because if you don't have a small area, if you want to buy bags of compost, it's going to add up really quickly.
Right. I know Sierra Vista does have a delivery service for a truckload, So that's an option. It's not cheap, but it does get the job done.
Do the areas, I'm thinking this because I know a lot of landscape rock is sold across the region. Do those companies also deal with soil? Because I know they deal with the truckload when it comes to delivering landscape materials.
Exactly. And they most of them do carry some form of topsoil and, of course, sand and compost. I see more and more with compost. Those are your smaller vendors out there.
So that's a good thing to keep in mind so you're not having to buy, you know, these bags and bags and bags and bags and bags that you're piling onto this poor little crate when you're in the home improvement store.
Right.
Well, and I'd like to remind everybody that, you know, the definition of topsoil isn't a very fine-tuned definition because a lot of people say, you know, I'll bring you topsoil in. Well, it's not really soil. It's just sand. So, you know, clarify with your provider what they are going to provide so that you'd get something. The whole principle of raised beds is you get to create your own soil. Well, create it properly and well, and
right.
don't just put sand in it.
Exactly. And I think really we're limited to what's near us geographically, which is why our topsoil, it looks more towards on the sandy side as opposed to being a really rich soil. But it's not really a one-time fix. You know, when you build up your raised beds, you're going to have to add your compost every year thereafter to keep on amending that soil. So it's not a one-time fix. It does require that maintenance.
Right. And you also kind of want to veer away from anything that has a lot of peat moss in it, right? Because you want to encourage the soil to retain moisture, especially here in this dry environment.
Yes, exactly. Peat moss tends to be very hydrophobic when it's dry. So what happens is you pour a large amount of water onto any kind of peat moss base and it kind of pulls off to the side and it runs off to the side of your container and not really through the soil where the roots are.
In containers, isn't that just for the just to create a light material for shipping purposes?
Yes,
primarily?
Exactly.
That's why they use that?
Yeah, correct.
Right.
Well, since we're getting the soil prepared, we also want to think about getting the seedlings started that will eventually be going into that soil, right?
Right. It depends on what plants you're trying to plant in your raised beds or your garden or whatnot. And some do much better as transplants as opposed to directly seeding into those. So there is still time to sow your seeds indoors for your summer and spring transplanting.
We actually got a call at the garden center last week specifically about that question. Denise, can you go into some detail about, do you remember which plants do better with direct seeding as opposed to a transplant? Because I think that would be helpful for the general public.
Right, exactly. Well, I think it depends. First of all, you're going to go ornamentals or you're going to go vegetables. Ornamentals, for the most part, you can start a lot of them from seed. Directly into your seed packets or seeds that you've saved from the previous years. However, it's going to take a lot more time to get that showy color. So that's why a lot of people prefer to go to the garden centers and purchase flowers that are blooming or they're budding out. I think that's ultimately the preference for that. As far as vegetables, the ones that come to my mind, broccoli does a lot better if you transplant it into the garden as opposed to directly seeding that.
Really?
Whereas your leafy greens like lettuce and spinach at this time do really well if you just kind of sprinkle them out in your garden.
Mm-hmm.
Tomatoes also.
Tomatoes and peppers, yeah. They need to be a little bit larger when they're put in the ground. Otherwise, you run out of time, don't you?
Exactly. It gets way too hot too quick in our area, so we need to make sure that we put our transplants of tomato and chili into the ground and not seeds, directly sown seeds.
Mm-hmm. Now, what about air temperature here? The ones that you sow directly into the ground, do we need to be aware of how cold it's eventually going to get?
Yes, it depends what season you're looking at. Of course, you want to make sure that if you're planting cool season vegetables or plants, you want to make sure that the temperatures are optimum for those to grow because you're not going to just get water for them to sprout or to germinate, but really to establish themselves. And if hot or cold temperatures come in, then you can get actually the reverse effect that you're looking for. For example, if you have some kind of a plant such as lettuce, and if it's too hot when you plant that, you'll get the leaves out, but then it starts to bolt, which means it's going to start setting out seed. Mm. That's not what you want because you're going to eat your lettuce for the leaves.
But for this particular season, we're thinking about maybe just what, tomatoes, pepper, squash, cucumbers?
Yeah, we're actually a little bit too early. Those would be to start off those inside
indoors.
Your house indoors.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. But your cooler season plants like snapdragons, pansies, you can certainly get those going because those are it's still cool enough for that.
Well, thinking of vegetable gardening, I know the Master Gardeners, you are already planning a vegetable gardening workshop, I think, here in the coming weeks that we will give people a heads up for as we get closer.
Yes, definitely. Just like January and February are the months for roses, March is the month for vegetables, and we'll be able to share that and bring in some vegetable specialists to come in and talk to you about what's going on with the vegetable gardens.
Well, we haven't exactly gotten out of pruning range if you haven't done any pruning on your trees, but it's getting very close to where you should get it done.
There's not really a deadline, but at this point of the year, the sooner the better. Mm-hmm. You can always do it if it's an emergency, but the sooner the better at this point, because I've seen some budding on a number of things. I've seen some of the Bermuda that gets a lot of water and a lot of sun. It's already turning green, so yeah. It's coming on us pretty quickly. It may still get cold, which is problematic, but be aware that you need to get out there with some sharp tools.
Now, I see here that grapevines need to be severely pruned back up to about 80% to encourage fruiting. And I know we've talked in the past about, you know, pruning your roses pretty far back in order to get an optimal display the following season. But how does that work with grapevines? Sort of the same concept?
It's certainly the same concept. You want to make sure that you remove, severely prune your grapevines as well to be able to get that effect. And the effect is getting your grapes in the summertime. So definitely following that same principle.
And if you drive by some of the vineyards in the Upper Valley, they have already pruned and they're back. Mm. It's amazing how much they prune those every year. So I would say at least 80%.
So I don't know really how grapevines grow. Obviously, they're climbers of sorts, but how big do they usually get?
Well, it really depends. There is a very intricate way to be able to stake the plants and train them to be able to get that. So to tell you the truth offhand, I really wouldn't know. It would have to depend on the cultivar that you're actually growing.
Well, and also you're growing for commercial purposes as opposed to just home use. A lot of people grow grapevines for cover over an arbor or something a little bit more decorative.
And that's how I've seen it.
Right, yeah. Right. And if you get grapes, fine.
But right.
But the vineyards, their goal is
production.
That's
so
right.
It's a different goal.
Well, what else do we need to be thinking about this month?
Well, I think it's the time to start thinking about your lawns, pre-emergent herbicide, and also if you have any type of winter-friendly grass like fescue, if you haven't already fertilized, you should fertilize at this point. Don't do it if it's the dormant hybrid Bermudas, but if you have the fescue, go ahead and give it a shot.
When does that fescue begin to die back, especially if you've overseeded it over Bermuda? When do you finally see the fescue starting to go and the Bermuda come?
A lot of times, because they're mixed planting in a lawn and whatnot, you'll see one. The Bermuda is going to start taking over the fescue, but generally degrees over 80 really kind of shuts down any rye or fescue.
So you still got a few good months.
Sure.
Right.
Yeah, plenty
exactly.
of time. Yeah.
And
exactly.
The pre-emergent herbicides, obviously, just so you can cut down on the number of weeds that are going to be coming up this spring. And I honestly haven't seen that many mustard weed plants this season, so I'm hoping that's a good sign for
right.
the coming spring weed season.
Right.
Well, we're out of time for your February tips, but we have them posted online in case you want to read more. Just go to the Good to Grow page at ktep.org. You can also listen to some of our past shows there. And there's an email link to the Master Gardeners in case you want to ask them a question and even attach a picture of your plant problem. The Master Gardeners can also be reached on the Master Gardener hotline at 566-1276, 566-1276. Thanks for listening today. I'm Norma Martinez.
I'm Denise Rodriguez.
And Bill Hooten.
And remember, a gardener shadow is the best way to keep your garden good to grow.